The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So Chris O'Brien, every spring, takes what we might call, if we lived in that country, a walkabout. So he is on his annual or semi-annual walkabout, and he'll tell us about that when he gets back. But he'll be gone for a week or two. So, in the meantime, we'll have a guest co-host who may also be the guest. So, next week we'll have Greg Bishop. This week we have Micah Hanks. Micah, are you ready?
Oh, yes. As always, born ready to rock.
As opposed to Born Free, which was a song of 30, 40 years ago.
Well, you know, in this country, I'd like to think I am. Although I was telling a friend just earlier today about how, you know, I'm not one of these conspiracy theorists, at least to any extent that I think that one can be criticized these days, you know, like some of the websites, the sensational kind of conspiracism that we see. But I've noticed, especially around the end of the month, it is just so unbearable where I live in Asheville, the police presence. A lot of people joke around about there being a police state, but I'm pretty certain I was almost pulled over last night for doing absolutely nothing wrong. I merely was driving at night. I was kidding with my friend. It's like there's a curfew or something around here, and that people will say they're trying to meet quotas and whatnot, and I'm not demonizing. I've got friends in the Asheville Police Department, but, you know, nonetheless, it does seem to be a little less free maybe than it once was.
Born free, huh?
Yeah, born free and then enslaved thereafter. And you don't need a police force to do that, Gene. We've got taxes for that, right?
Right, but North Carolina is already a controversial state because of that bathroom law, and I don't want to get into that. Except I'll just point out for those who are either conservative, liberal, or whatever, there is no report from any police department of anyone abusing anyone else as a result of going in the wrong bathroom. So let's leave it at that. That's what the police say. I didn't say it. I didn't make it up. He's not the New York liberal. But let's talk about a few subjects that came up in last week's episode, which featured Nick Redfern and Greg Bishop. And maybe you want to follow up. And the question I asked first, and you're a young whippersnapper, so you may know this better than anyone else except for Chris, who, of course, is a musician. And that is Prince. Did Prince ever do anything in terms of his music that had a paranormal aspect to it?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Gene, there was a lot of interesting stuff. Gosh, I even have some sound bites of him talking about various things, which we may or may not have to get to right now. But I can definitely tell you the kind of things that he was interested in. In some of his songs, one particular called Dreamer, Prince had talked specifically about, you know, while we're asleep at night, you know, there are chemicals being dropped over the city by helicopters and whatnot. And it sounded like a reference to chemtrails. Now, that may not be paranormal, but it certainly is something that's prevalent in conspiracy literature. Now, most people know the theories about chemtrails go back to around 1996. There was a bulletin, I think, that was being put out on the web in various places, probably not just a bulletin. There were a lot of different theories, and it had to do with the idea that, again, chemical agents were being released from aircraft. Most recently, I think the newest form that this theory has taken was a WorldNet Daily article written by none other than action star Chuck Norris from the Missing in Action films and other such kung fu and karate movies, although he was a Chun-Kuk-Do stylist himself. It wasn't really kung fu. That said, when this article appeared, it was interesting because although I think really some of the other celebrity deaths in the music world have been overshadowed by more recently Prince and before that David Bowie, we also lost Glenn Frey of the Eagles and Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard, just like Prince, had a line and song that specifically said chemtrails. And Chuck Norris references both of those songs, the Merle Haggard tune and also Dreamer by Prince. And so I was interested in whether or not Prince had explicitly meant chemtrails in this lyric in Dreamer, where they're talking about chemicals being dropped from above. And sure enough, there was a 2009 interview that he did with Tavis Smiley, the talk host, in which he specifically states that he was very aware of the phenomena. And there's a long pause where he's saying this. He pauses as though he's kind of collecting his thoughts, Gene. And then Prince says, this phenomenon called chemtrails. And he goes on talking specifically about when he was a child. He said that they would be standing out in the yard and looking up at the sky, and he said you'd see a contrail and go, oh, that's cool. And he said over the years there would be more and more and more of them, and he said he always believed that when they would appear, everyone in the neighborhood would start fighting. So he thought, Prince did, that the chemtrail phenomena was some sort of a measure to control mood and behavior through the release of chemicals into the atmosphere. Chuck Norris, on the other hand, in his recent WorldNet Daily article, had inferred that this had been more likely to be something used for purpose of immunization, but to immunize the populace without their knowledge. You know, it's interesting. There was a bulletin that was released by the Air Force a number of years ago in which it actually tried to debunk some of the chemtrail theories. But the funny thing is that you know what happens when an official agency dispels rumors about a conspiracy theory. That only bolsters the claims in the minds of the conspiracists themselves. So that was one thing that Prince spoke about, but I'll give you two other brief anecdotes thereafter. When he was a child, and this also from the Tavis Smiley interview that he did in 2009, Prince also said that he was born with epilepsy. Had you heard that before?
No, I did not. I do know that the authorities are looking into the fact that he apparently had some problems and had to take painkillers, addictive painkillers, opiates.
Right. See, I wonder if there hadn't been some underlying health issues is the point. But anyway, about the epilepsy thing, he said that he was born with epilepsy, but that he believed he had been healed by an angel at an early age. And he said that he didn't have conscious memory of this, but that his mother always told him when he was a child that he walked into the room with her one day and told her, Mama, I'm not going to be sick anymore. And she says, no, why is that? And he said, well, I've been healed by an angel. So that was the story his mother always told him. And then right before his death, Gene, this is also kind of interesting. Prince had had a gathering there at the Paisley estate. I don't think that's the actual name. It's called Paisley something. He had had a gathering in which there was, I think, a private concert there at his home. And he had said at that time, apparently he'd also privately said to friends before this, that he was a lucid dreamer. And he said he regularly had lucid dreams. And after David Bowie died, he said that Bowie had come back and had spoken with him during some of these lucid dreams, and that he always relished being able to see friends who had passed on to the other side during these extremely vivid lucid dreams he had.
Oh, boy. It looks like a lot of singers tend to get involved in this sort of thing.
I think so. They tend to have a lot of, how would you put this? They have a lot of these kind of esoteric interests, and you might say that it's the sort of abstract random nature of an artistic mind. But I'll tell you who Prince always reminded me of, Gene, was Jimi Hendrix. I remember particularly when I was a child seeing Prince. He was performing probably sometime in the mid-1990s. At this point, he was going by just the artist. He had kind of renounced his name there for a while. And he was playing one of those wild, funky-looking guitars of his. And I'd never seen him play guitar. And when I saw him play, I was like, wow, this guy could be Jimi Hendrix reincarnated. Now, he never claimed that that was the case, but I mentioned Hendrix because Hendrix had apparently, in order to kind of inspire himself, and I think Chaz Chandler, who had been his manager, Chaz Chandler, formerly of the Animals, Chaz had also been one that would give Hendrix sci-fi books. And from time to time, it was said that Hendrix had read not only sci-fi but UFO books to help inspire his songs and the kinds of far-out-sounding songs that he wrote. So, you know, whether or not there was any other kind of, there's obviously, and I think you can't deny the influence, especially in his guitar style that Prince has. He was obviously influenced by Hendrix, but, you know, you're right. It is something that you find a lot of musicians and artists do tend to kind of gravitate toward these subjects and are certainly interested in them. But I was very interested to hear that Merle Haggard had been writing about chemtrails. And I've also further heard that he was very interested in the paranormal in general. And that a friend and fellow podcaster of mine recently, Jim Harold, had mentioned that, yeah, he said Merle Haggard had had all kinds of interest in UFOs and things like that prior to his death. So a lot of people, I think, really are more interested in these subjects maybe than many of us know.
Well, there is that the fact that creative people tend to be carried along to the paranormal. Let me carry along you to this other thing that we offer. Our thing after the Paracast, it's the second radio show we do. And the only way that you can hear that show is to become a member of the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. And once you're there, you'll get the instructions. You'll learn about all the features, such as the enhanced version of this show without the ads and lots of other stuff coming. Plus.theparacast.com. theparacast.com. So Chris O'Brien's on Walkabout. We've got Micah Hanks. You're in
the Paracast.
I know that a lot of our listeners are interested in UFOs, the issue of giant skeletons found in America, paranormal investigations, and what the top researchers think about such topics. One online magazine has been presenting such unusual information since 1985. It is Alternate Perceptions Magazine at apmagazine.info. Use their search function to find articles on just about every topic imaginable. That's apmagazine.info.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using the computer, or did you buy a new one?
No. I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home, or business, or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly, certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Micah Hanks joining us this week as our combo guest co-host and guest. And we're keeping him busy. And we started talking about music and rock, but I want to jump into other subjects because we have so much to talk about here, and we've got questions from our listeners. So we also observed last week the passing of Albert K. Bender, who was very much responsible for the Men in Black legend. Not the first Men in Black case. You can go back to a possible Man in Black encounter during Maury Island. But did you do much studying of Albert Bender?
You know, I'm quite familiar with Albert's legacy, I think, especially with what some believe was the literal creation of the Men in Black. Of course, he was really, now correct me if I'm wrong, he had really been one of the most outspoken flying saucer advocates early on, and he, of course, had that publication that he had been putting out, and there was that strange circumstance where he actually ceased the publication and had said rather cryptically that he had apparently come very close to finding out the secret behind flying saucers, but that it was something that he couldn't really talk about very much. The famous story, as listeners here, of course, will know, is that Bender had been allegedly visited by individuals whom really many kind of view this as one of the earliest, at least as far as ufological appearances, one of the earliest appearances of the Men in Black. But, you know, some people, and I think that probably Nick Redfern is the very most knowledgeable expert right now on the MIB phenomena, having authored not just one, but many books on that. In one of his MIB books, had featured a series of essays by other writers, and I had contributed one, which will tie in with Albert Bender in a unique way here. The essay that I wrote was talking about really the prevalence of, negativity and darkness and even death and evil that is associated with the color black and has been really the case throughout century. You know, if you watch the old Western films, the bad guys wore black, you know, although really in many of the films, actually, the good guys did just as well. So the interesting thing is that when we see mysterious figures, the motif that is very prevalent with Men in Black, which is usually the black suit, the tie, sunglasses, sometimes there's a hat that accompanies that. We see it appear in a number of different kind of manifestations. We can go all the way back to Odin. And when in the mythological lore associated with Odin, it was often said that he would wander in the form of an old man. He would often wear a long-brimmed hat like that and sometimes would be shrouded in dark clothing, robes and things like this, so as to disguise himself as he traveled. Interestingly, various interpretations of that character are said to have become influential in the minds of authors that would appear later, such as J.R.R. Tolkien. Odin had been one of the inspirations behind the Gandalf character. Some have further said that that similar imagery of the man clad in black with the long-brimmed hat and sometimes a scarf just as well, it was one particular kind of a nouveau image that had allegedly been the inspiration behind Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor in the British sci-fi series Doctor Who, his character and the appearance with the hat that he wore. He didn't wear black by any means. He usually preferred brown coats and had the brown fedora with the wide brim and then the long, long, long scarf. But that also had been kind of inspired by a very similar sort of Man in Black imagery. You know, in more recent times, there was this interesting phenomenon that occurred up there in Baltimore, in which there was what was known as the Poe Toaster, which I mentioned in the article that we did for Nick's book. The Poe Toaster was in likelihood not merely one person. For at least a long time it was, and then I think probably the progeny of the individual carried on the tradition. But the story of the Poe Toaster was that there was this man who, once again, in a long black either cloak or cape or other sort of garb, a long-brimmed black hat and then a red scarf about his neck. Sometimes it was a white scarf, and sometimes he was carrying roses. The story was that the man would walk through the streets, and he would head to the grave of Edgar Allan Poe at night, and he would often do this without being accosted. But as the years went on and the legend became more and more famous, on the night coalescing into midnight and, of course, marking the advent of Poe's birthday every year, people would begin to gather on the streets. And from time to time, some people would actually harass the so-called Poe Toaster. Unfortunately, I don't think that he appears any longer, but the tradition was he would lay flowers and a glass of cognac, well, actually an entire bottle, on the grave of Edgar Allan Poe. But he would partake in a glass, raise it to the great poet, and enjoy a beverage himself there before he left. So, you know, once again, the Poe Toaster kind of evokes that, you know, long-brimmed hat, the dark-colored garb, sometimes a scarf. You don't hear very much about MIBs wearing scarves, but as far as ufological appearances of these kind of characters, yeah, Bender was the first who said that these, I think it had been three individuals, if memory serves, that came and visited him there. He had inferred that they had been very intimidating and that these individuals had sort of silenced him.
Yeah, but you see, the interesting thing about Bender is that in 1962, he came out with a book called Flying Saucers and the Three Men, where these men in black were supposedly ETs from a planet called Kayak with a silent Z.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. There's a photograph. In fact, if you go to the Wikipedia page for Albert K. Bender, there's a photograph where he's posing by one of those images, which is the classic MIB. And what you find is with his implication or his belief that these had not been individuals trying to silence him from perhaps a government agency, but rather aliens themselves. Once again, you find this kind of unique idea that it begins to emerge in the UFO culture that there is some sort of an operation in which both the flying saucers and their occupants and officialdom are sort of working in tandem, or that variously there is a UFO operation that is intermixed and interspersed within our own society. In other words, that they have vested interests here in Earth and that they actually operate on it. So, yeah, with Bender, you find a lot of those earliest kind of formations of the various memes that you'd start seeing later in UFOs. And, Gene, I've begun to kind of look at it almost folklorically in a lot of ways over the years. I'm not saying that there isn't some truth behind these stories, but I don't think we can deny that someone like Bender claims to have an experience like this, and that story is proliferated throughout various literature over the years. By the time the story has been retold and retold and retold and appeared in so many books, it has gotten to a point of being legendary in status, and so many aspects of the story change. It's very difficult, and as a UFO culturist, I guess you might call me, I'm someone who looks at the culture that surrounds UFOs, the things that advocates say and the things that skeptics would say, too, as it relates to their various beliefs, even though a skeptic is supposed to be a person who is, in their way of thinking, antithetical, I guess, to belief. They nonetheless have beliefs. So I think that should really be pointed out. But the way that belief about this subject has built up over time based on the legendary status that some of these stories take on over the years is probably, to me, more interesting in a lot of ways than the UFO phenomena itself, and really, I think, fundamental to understanding it, too. Albert Bender was certainly one of those influential figures who lent a lot of legendary kind of themes to this broader phenomena.
Bender had turned his attic where he lived, I guess with his family, his parents, into kind of a chamber of horrors. And this is something that Nick referred to last week. I just wanted to get your early reaction to it. But the thing that we started to talk about last week, and we didn't get through it. It was only maybe 3 or 4 minutes in the final segment of the episode. We had so much ground. I thought I'd put this in your lap in terms of UFOs. And it's a belief in UFOs as a possible solution or a part of a solution that really I don't think has really gained all that much traction. And that's the story and the theories of the late Trevor James Constable. And we'll talk about that in our next segment. We have Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report. Chris O'Brien's on Walkabout. So it's with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Bad news, Americans. You're probably stockpiling for a disaster all wrong. When the big one comes, you'll need more than that poisonous, over-salted survival food you now see everywhere. There are 3 vital things that your survival food is missing, and it's the first thing to disappear from grocery stores. Go to superfoodradio.com now to see my story of how I nearly died when I was forced to live on a popular survival food. That's superfoodradio.com, and I'll show you how everything you've been told about survival food is dead wrong. Go to superfoodradio.com now.
Are you worried about how dangerous the world has become? In these days of terrorist attacks, natural disasters, or even a future collapse, you need to be medically prepared to keep your family safe. I'm Joe Alton, MD of store.doomandbloom.net, where you'll find an entire line of uniquely designed medical kits and supplies for when help is not on the way. For everything from individual first aid kits to the ultimate family medical bag, go to store.doomandbloom.net today. That's store.doomandbloom.net. You'll be glad you did.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, a place for mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
How would you like to make 17% on your money in only 90 days?
That's right. Gold owners made 17% in only 3 months as gold had its best quarterly gain in 30 years. Gold is on the move, and you need to get government-issued, legal tender gold coins starting at only $139 each. The U.S. Money Reserve, one of the largest gold distributors in the country, announces the first ever at-cost gold release on this station for only $139 each. 1-866-944-GOLD or online at usmoneyreserve.com. Official U.S. government issued legal tender solid gold coins at cost for only $139 each. Call 1-866-944-GOLD. Ask for a free 55-page gold buyer's book. Plus, get a free Walking Liberty half dollar just for reading this must-have book all about gold. Remember, gold is on the move, up 17%. Call 1-866-944-GOLD.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
He's doing an echo. I can do all sorts of crazy sounds, too, on this mixer, but I choose not to. You know, it's hard enough for me, the way it's adjusted, to sound like a human being. You know, I really have to push that. Really difficult, but I manage. Okay, so we had a book I first became aware of 30, 40 years ago called They Live in the Sky, and the author was Trevor James Constable, except that the book listed it as Trevor James, which I guess he wanted to make a pseudonym. He died recently. His theory was that at least some UFOs were like giant amoebas, living creatures. So what do you say about that?
I think it's a really interesting theory. Again, I don't know how likely, in my own personal estimation of the broader UFO phenomena, it may be. But I always found it interesting because Trevor James Constable was one of those characters early on who was someone who was trying to take, I think, kind of like Keel and a number of others, he was trying to take a kind of atypical approach to understanding phenomena. He wasn't going to give himself to this idea that, well, I think therefore they must be aliens. He was willing to entertain the idea that this may be some kind of terrestrial phenomena. And as far out as, I think he called them critters, and as far out and as absurd, in fact, as that may seem, I give Constable credit for having at least tried to look for an earthly understanding of the phenomena before leaping to the conclusion that these must be extraterrestrial, which your listeners, of course, know, as do mine, that this is not particularly an estimate of the situation, as it were, that I endorse as far as UFOs go. I just don't know that there's enough evidence that says we, without question, know we're dealing with ET. So Constable kind of took that same approach, too. I actually had an opportunity to interview Trevor James Constable a few years ago. The book that I had become familiar with was not the one you mentioned. I actually had read another one called The Cosmic Pulse of Life. And a friend of mine, who is actually just as nerdy as I am about this sort of stuff, his nerdiness about UFO subjects and similar things might rival mine and yours put together, Gene. But Vance Pollock is his name, and he had gotten a copy of The Cosmic Pulse of Life because he's very interested in that era of ufology, those 50s and 60s researchers and some of the interesting theories that were coming out. And he had written to Constable to see if he was still alive and if he might mail the book to him and have him sign it. Constable replied and said, by all means, yes. And he actually signed the book for him. And so Vance approached me. This was probably 7 or 8 years ago, Gene. And he said, you know, you ought to get this guy on your show. No one ever talks to him anymore. And he was a really weird thinker as it relates to UFOs early on. And so I did. I contacted him, found an email for him online, and he agreed to do an interview. And he wanted to do 3 hours. He said, we have so much to discuss. And it was kind of sad because I got the distinct impression that he didn't get to do many interviews. He didn't feel that his theories were very taken very seriously, I think, in the modern UFO era. And he hadn't had an opportunity to really, first of all, be approached by anyone, let alone be offered an interview. And I told him, unfortunately, we've only got an hour, but I'd still like to have you on. So I called him up, and earlier in that program that night, I'd been filling in on a local radio station that I did an occasional guest hosting position on here in my hometown of Asheville. Greg Bishop, of all people, had been on the show in the first hour, and I mentioned, as we do in radio, I teased who would be our guests in the second hour. And Greg said, oh, well, he says, you're lucky. He says, I've always wanted to talk to that guy, and I've never been able to find him. And I said, Greg, stick around and talk. And so Greg held on the line, and from the telephone did what I'm doing with you today. He did a guest co-hosting thing with me, and we interviewed Constable. And it was really interesting talking with him because, again, here he was, again, a really kind of a maverick thinker for his day, and we had this interesting talk. So fast forward to the present. I hadn't heard that he'd passed away, as you just mentioned. And it was none other than Greg Bishop who had posted about it online saying, oh, we've lost another one. And I wrote on the post that he made on Facebook, I said, Greg, I'll try and find that interview we did. And Greg said, wait, what interview? Greg didn't remember right offhand that we had spoken with Trevor Constable. And so I couldn't find it in my archives, and I posted online that I was trying to find it. Lo and behold, here comes Vance Pollock again, having seen my reply to Greg's post and emails me the audio file, which I now have back in my possession. And so, yeah, it's rather interesting to look back now and even, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, look at how my own ideas about this phenomena has changed, let alone how much it has changed since Trevor first proposed the idea of critters in the sky. One final anecdote, it did remind me of something, Gene. There was a story, I think, written by Arthur Conan Doyle, probably in the latter part of the 19th century, called The Horror of the Heights. Are you familiar with it?
I don't think so. Why don't you tell us?
It was a short story that Doyle wrote, which involved, now you got to keep in mind that this is, you know, it may have actually dated to the early part of the 20th century because I know it involved airplanes. So it actually may have been a later story. But in the story, a pilot, an intrepid pilot, decides to ascend to an altitude that no other pilot had ever flown to. And, of course, he was aware of the dangers that might arise from flying his plane so high, but he was compelled, kind of like the proverbial cat, you know, toward water or maybe an electrical outlet. He flies higher and higher to fulfill his curiosity. And he gets to this altitude. And when he gets up there, there are these jellyfish-like creatures that exist up in the upper reaches of the atmosphere that at that time in the story no human had ever reached. And it was the earliest mention that I had found of, once again, another meme that we find that is rather pervasive throughout certain UFO literature, which is the idea of flying jellyfish or UFOs that resemble jellyfish or other kind of sea creatures. So this was sort of similar. I know Ivan Sanderson had talked about this kind of an idea just as well, and it was very reminiscent of what Trevor Constable had proposed with his critters, these amoeba-like life forms that actually existed up in the sky.
That's what it is. Amoeba-like creatures. But, you know, I mentioned this very briefly, and I don't know if you remember this. There was a sci-fi TV show, kind of a cult show, that went on the Sci-Fi Channel called Farscape. You remember it?
I do remember it, although I regret to say I have not pursued watching it as I should, but I think it is on Netflix.
Okay, so it's about this guy who takes a spaceship. Spacecraft, kind of a primitive one, an astronaut, and he gets caught in a wormhole and is transported to the other side of the universe in a place populated by a few Muppets because the son of Jim Henson was one of the producers. But it turned out that the spaceships they used were all living creatures.
That's pretty interesting. Living living space vessels. Once again, I guess I could make a Whovian reference here that I think it was the fifth series of Doctor Who since the relaunch, which would have been the first series starring actor Matt Smith playing the role of the 11th Doctor. There is a city that the Doctor and his new companion Amy Pond visit, in which the city is traversing space on the back of a space whale. It's literally a large blue whale-like creature that's flying through space, and it's being controlled against its will. Kind of an interesting concept. But yeah, you do see that, again, pretty prevalent in various sci-fi literature, this idea of an organic or a semi-organic component within the actual spacecraft. And not just, again, a sentience, like artificially intelligent spacecraft and things like this. I mean, we're talking about an actual biological organism that is tasked with propelling one through space. So that's kind of an interesting thing. There was sort of a bit of that motif I noticed that came about in the film based on Travis Walton's hair-raising encounter with a UFO, Fire in the Sky. Of course, Travis is very outspoken about the differences between his experience and what appeared in that movie. It was very much a Hollywood rendition. But in the film, the interior of the spaceship, for those who remember the movie, had a very kind of an organic feel to it. It was almost more like he had gone into some sort of a weird slimy cave rather than the interior of a flying saucer that one might expect.
Now, just one thing in addition that is a peculiar side aspect of Trevor James Constable, that when they were putting together material for a follow-up book, The Flying Saucers and the Three Men, Trevor James Constable was one of the people who wrote a piece, a letter that was included. So did he have a particular interest in the kind of experiences that Bender had? Let's find out more in our next segment. We've got Micah Hanks. So it's Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Conspiracy Journal is your number one source for the hidden world of the weird and strange. We bring you thought-provoking and controversial material for free-thinking individuals who are seeking what is really going on in our world today. Some of this material may adversely affect you. Other pieces are meant to enlighten. Either way, be prepared to be intrigued by such things as the reality of UFOs, ghosts, strange creatures from time and space, hidden conspiracies, time travel, Nikola Tesla, suppressed technology, and a whole lot more. You can find out more by visiting our website at conspiracyjournal.com. There, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter sent directly to your email address. Find out what they don't want you to know.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Dr. Joel Wallach here. If you're a baby boomer and you're worried about the big epidemics coming, and I'm not talking about the bird flu or the swine flu, I'm talking about epidemics of Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, arthritis, cancer. That's because the 80 million baby boomers followed all the advice of doctors, and Houston, we have a problem.
See Dr. Wallach live in Farmington, New Mexico, Thursday, May 12th at 7 p.m. Go to www.cdocinfarmington.com. That's www.cdocinfarmington.com.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is it. For the first time ever on this station, U.S. government gold offered at cost for only $139 each. With Wall Street suffering its worst start to a trading year in history, now is especially the time to be paying attention to gold. This first time ever, U.S. legal tender government gold offered at cost for only $139 each is from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call them at 1-866-944-GOLD. Gold is on the move, so don't miss out. For the first time ever on this station, U.S. government gold offered at cost for only $139 each. 1-866-944-GOLD or online at usmoneyreserve.com. Ask for a free 55-page gold buyer's book. Plus, get a free Walking Liberty half dollar just for reading this must-have book. Get your free gold book, your free half dollar, but most importantly, get your gold at cost for only $139 per coin. 1-866-944-GOLD.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
He is searching for his inner gut to find more voices to use. And eventually he'll actually find one that works. I'm just kidding. I didn't mean that. I really didn't mean that. Honest engine. Didn't mean it. Didn't mean it. Not at all. All right, so we were talking about Trevor James Constable and his viewpoints about some UFOs being amoeba-like creatures large. Now, I know Ivan T. Sanderson, as you mentioned, did look into this as a serious possibility. Anyone else, or is he kind of one of these obscure characters in the UFO field with interesting theories, but they just really never gain serious traction?
You know, unfortunately, I kind of view Constable as being the latter. When I spoke with him, and I'll never forget this, Gene, he had a sort of a commanding presence. He had a certain way of speaking. You know, there was this roundness and almost a regal sound to his voice. And it really kind of gave one the impression that this was a man who was, I mean, he was, the way that the regal sound carried over in his voice, I imagined him as being this sort of an aristocratic character, you know, with a scarf about his neck, you know, and lounging back and talking. He just had a very, you know, a very interesting presence about him. And it was sad because I think that although he accepted it gracefully, he felt that, you know, his ideas had kind of fallen to the wayside over the years, especially with the proliferation of the ever-present extraterrestrial interpretation of UFOs. Now, again, I'll be clear in saying that I don't endorse Constable's theory any more than I endorse the idea of extraterrestrial visitation. I think maybe we could say that either could be a possibility, however remote they may seem. And the reason I would even say that is because, although, you know, I think Constable, again, kind of, he presented, like, very unusual-looking photographs. I remember some of the pictures that were in the book, The Cosmic Pulse of Life, of these purported critters, they looked to me very reminiscent of what, you know, paranormal enthusiasts today would call maybe orbs or something along those lines. It seemed that he was looking at the same sort of phenomena and interpreting it through, I guess, that ufological lens at that time. For me, while I wouldn't say that I literally think that there are these amoeba-like creatures coming down, you know, from the Super Sargasso Sea that Charles Fort envisioned, and they're coming swooping down and stealing cattle and things like that, I think Trevor very literally may have actually thought that. But, you know, NASA did an interesting study about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, may have been earlier, and you can still find this online. I should try and find it and link it in the Paracast forums. But this study had involved the idea of what some call energizoa, or, you know, some sort of a plasma-based life that might spring to life from within the vacuum of space. And NASA had certainly at least entertained the possibility that there may be energetic life forms, which are not life as we would expect it to manifest here on Earth, but that might exist in other reaches of space. And I've heard some anecdotal information about those involved with the space program, perhaps even astronauts, describing infrared anomalies that appeared to resemble, well, once again, amoeba-like, though much smaller than Constable would have envisioned, but amoeba-like structures sometimes, visible only in the infrared. Now, again, I'd have to be able to find some supporting literature for that. You know, this is anecdotal information that was passed along to me a number of years ago by a colleague. Whatever the case may be, I do think that there have been some realistic interpretations and hypotheses presented by the space program, you know, by exobiologists and by others in the scientific community that at very least did bear, you know, marked similarity to Constable's theories. But, you know, again, I don't think that as he envisioned them, and especially as they related to a possible explanation for UFOs, I don't think that they were able to maintain their ground throughout the decades. And, you know, my discussion with him years ago was that of a man who I think was a little disenfranchised with where his theories had fallen and how they'd more importantly fallen out of favor with the passing of time.
So in general, this guy was thought of as being a bit of a crank to most people. Of course, they think a lot worse of me, so don't take that in any way.
Well, I haven't seen that, but, you know, I guess we all have our critics, don't we?
I shouldn't wish to say.
Well, I will say this, though, that to me, Trevor might have been seen as a crank. But again, I give him the credit of being a person who, to the best of his ability, he was trying to think outside of the typical UFO paradigm. And although it led him down a different path, it was, again, in some ways, very similar to what John Keel had talked about. It was very similar to some of the ideas even that have been proposed by Jacques Vallée. You know, is there something that is far more localized in terms of the UFO presence rather than being the extraterrestrial phenomena that many take it to be? And it is interesting because there are such a variety of interpretations, and I think that really where people like Constable maybe erred in their interpretation was that while they were clever enough to say, you know, do we really have enough evidence that suggests E.T., is what we're dealing with when we talk about UFOs. I think he had gone, as many researchers tend to do, he'd gone a little too far in one direction or another with regard to his own hypotheticals, his own theorizing. And it's okay to theorize, but I'll tell you, Gene, I've gone to a few UFO conferences here over the last couple of months, and I'm a bit shocked, frankly, when I attend these lectures, how some of the bigger names in the field engage in this almost endless speculation. And from speaker to speaker to speaker, it's always different from one person to the next. This person says the entire thing's E.T. and that it's a cover-up. This person thinks that these are E.T. time travelers from the future who are also symbiotic, you know, or maintain symbiotic relationships with artificial intelligence, or they themselves are the artificial intelligence created by somebody long time ago in a galaxy far away. You know, there's endless speculation about the UFO subject. Where my own personal interpretation, although I know we've been springboarding off the heels of discussion about Constable, but I think that it's important that, and this is where my own mind has tended to go more and more in the last couple of years, it's important to be able to recognize what we can say with certainty about UFOs. And unfortunately, the majority of what we read in books and we see in lectures these days is based on a lot of speculation. There may be some good evidence for something, but I think that, you know, what we see is researchers they'll find information, they'll follow lines of thought, they'll find a new thread, they'll employ this possibility as a line of thought, and it really takes them off down into this realm of being so speculative that really, I mean, it starts sounding a lot more like fantasy than really what we know we're dealing with, which is merely one thing. If there are apparently objects seen in the sky, some of them appear to be intelligently controlled, some of them appear to be constructed objects or some sort of aircraft, structured objects, as it were. You know, some people do still, although we have to point out to a much lesser degree, I think, in the last few years than it once was decades ago, but to some significant degree, some people claim that there appears to be a presence associated with these craft, and some even claim to have had interactions with the operators. So make of it what you will, but really beyond that, I don't think that in terms of good, undeniable evidence, we have very much more to deal with. And my skeptic friends and I, the ones who are skeptical enough, but also open-minded enough to want to engage in discussions with people like myself. I consider myself a skeptic too, Gene. But we often discuss this sort of thing and say, really, how much hard evidence and what really kind of good verifiable proof do we have? I think that's why UFOs remain so perplexing and maybe why there is so much speculation, whether it be critters in the sky or, you know, time travelers from the future or aliens, whatever, is that the lack of evidence has helped foment imagination. And with UFOs, we have to understand and differentiate between the good evidence and the imaginary components.
There you go.
All right, let's leave Trevor James Constable and what he did. I suppose this is a kind of theory that could be brought up again. But what about in general in the UFO field? There's a feeling on the part of many of us that there aren't any great breakthroughs being made in research. I mean, we kind of are doing the same thing we did in the 50s, looking for spaceships, except for, you know, people who go into some more involved theories, such as from John Keel and, of course, from Trevor James Constable and that sort of thing. And we have about 40 seconds before we have to split for our break. So I'm going to ask you briefly. You can start here, and I know you can never be brief. Briefly, then, my friend, do you think someone's contributing anything significant towards UFO research?
I certainly think that there are a few people. You know, Ray Stanford comes to mind. I think that some of the investigative research of guys like Nick Pope is also very worthwhile right now. But when we come back from the break, we can get into, I think, maybe rather than those who are doing, what maybe needs to be done in order to present a more scientific view of ufology for the future.
All right, I'll go for that. Let's take a look and consider that further, but let me first consider this. We have another radio show that we do every week called After the Paracast. It's a show that has color commentary, kind of a wrap-up show. Sometimes we start an interview on the Paracast. We run out of time because it's a network radio show and you can't say, give me 10 more minutes. The time is the time. We continue it in After the Paracast. And the only way to get that show is to sign up for the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. We recently cut our long-term subscription rates, so sign up now before they go back up, plus.theparacast.com. We also offer the ad-free version of this show with higher quality audio. Chris O'Brien's on Walkabout with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
How would you like to make 17% on your money in only 90 days?
That's right. Gold owners made 17% in only 3 months as gold had its best quarterly gain in 30 years. Gold is on the move, and you need to get government-issued, legal tender gold coins starting at only $139 each. The U.S. Money Reserve, one of the largest gold distributors in the country, announces the first ever at-cost gold release on this station for only $139 each. 1-866-944-GOLD or online at usmoneyreserve.com. Official U.S. government issued legal tender solid gold coins at cost for only $139 each. Call 1-866-944-GOLD. Ask for a free 55-page gold buyer's book. Plus, get a free Walking Liberty half dollar just for reading this must-have book all about gold. Remember, gold is on the move, up 17%. Call 1-866-944-GOLD.